I'll be reading from Exodus chapter 20, verse 17. All right? Exodus 20, 17. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife, nor his manservant, nor his maidservant, nor his ox, or his ass, or anything that is thy neighbor's. Well, good evening, everyone. I'm always thankful for the opportunities which I have. I hope you had a wonderful afternoon. The subject this evening is gambling and what a Christian view should be towards the subject. When I was preaching and I travel around sometimes, every once in a while a congregation would give me a subject, and this was one that kind of came up. And it was one that they asked me to do a lesson on, which I kind of discovered in my study that the Bible doesn't necessarily use that word too often, or really allude to that idea of gambling. So then it comes to us as Christians to take these topics that approach us in our lives and to make an educated and informed decision on whether this activity is an activity that we should do or not. There are plenty of activities like this that maybe the Bible doesn't address directly, but through Bible principles, we should be able to dictate what we should do or what our conduct should be in relation to a certain activity. There are things in the scientific field that keep advancing, keep changing day after day after day. And the Bible obviously didn't talk about cloning. The Bible didn't talk about all these things. But a lot of times we have to make a judgment call on these issues. I think gambling is not necessarily one of those that we should be on separate pages on. So that's what we're going to be discussing this evening. Gambling. I want to define it so we're all on the same page this evening. What is gambling? What exactly are you talking about? I'm talking about a game of luck. Or a game of chance. And what this game of luck or game of chance usually ends in, it ends in the gain or loss of something of value. So it's a game of luck, a game of chance, and usually it'll end, almost always it'll end, in the gain or loss of something of value. Should gambling be something that a Christian is involved in? The subject of gambling. The verse that was read might seem like an odd verse, but I think that's where I am going to start this evening, in Exodus chapter 20, verse 17. The reason I'm going to start there is because of the idea that is found there, the idea of coveting. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 17, it says, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. You shall not covet your male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's." Well, what's the word covet mean? What does that word mean? It means a strong desire for worldly possessions. See, I think when we look at gambling, it would be hard to separate it from that idea, a strong desire for worldly possessions. Think of every type of gambling situation. Usually what is behind that gambling situation is a worldly possession. Almost every time. It's a worldly possession of some type. Yes, it could be cash, but it could be all the number of things. It's some type of worldly possession. And the question is do we have a strong desire for those things? See, when we look at gambling, I think many times it's caused by covetousness. It's caused by a strong desire, a strong craving. Maybe we call it greed, maybe we call it materialism. A strong desire for these things. When we look at Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, because of course Exodus is in the Old Testament, but if this is an idea carried over the New Testament, certainly it should be something that we watch out for. A strong desire for worldly possessions. A strong desire for worldly things. In Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 6, it says, "Therefore, put to death your members which are of the earth, fornication, uncleanliness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience." See, when we look at that idea, covetousness is brought up again. A strong desire, and it says this is idolatry. When we have a strong desire for worldly things, that when we have such a desire that it consumes our thoughts, and many times it leads us to places that we probably shouldn't go. How many times have we saw individuals that let gambling take over their lives to such a degree that it didn't matter necessarily if their kids got fed, because they had such a desire to gamble. In fact, this was an issue in my family, not necessarily in my grandparents, but in my great-grandparents. And I was raised with stories of some of my family that got lost in the way of gambling, that they desired so much for that thrill, for that rush, to risk what they have made on a game of chance that many times their family was put in hard situations. Certainly, we have to avoid covetousness throughout our lives. This strong desire that we put other things to the side, that we desire worldly possessions more than those things that should be important in our lives. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, it says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver." It says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver, nor he who loves abundance with increase." This is also vanity. If you're trying to fill your life with some type of worldly possession, it will not work. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5 verse 10 says, "He who loves silver will not be satisfied with silver." If you're trying to satisfy your life with worldly possessions, you will never be satisfied. When are you going to stop? With the boat? With the house? With the mansion? When are you going to stop? When will that desire be quenched for those things that are around us? Unfortunately, sometimes it's never quenched. When covetousness takes over our lives, other things are set aside that are certainly more important. In Luke chapter 5, we have some individuals in Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. We have some people arguing about an inheritance. They argue and they go back and forth in Luke chapter 12, arguing about this inheritance. Who should have this inheritance? And we see that Jesus doesn't want any part of it. Why does Jesus not want part of it? He's not concerned about worldly possessions. Are we concerned about worldly possessions throughout this life? Certainly there's our things that are essential to our lives. Food, shelter, those such things. And God says if we seek the kingdom of God first, He's going to help us in those respects. But will we trust Him enough to do that? Or do we desire the worldly possessions so much that we put our family to the side? That we put God to the side? That we put spiritual things to the side? Because we are consumed with a desire for worldly things and worldly possessions. I like what it says in Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 and 9. Those words of wisdom from Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 30, verses 7 through 9, it says, "Two things I request of you, deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of God." This individual asked for two things. He said, "Move falsehoods and lies far from me." And he says, the other request is that you don't make me either rich or poor. Put me somewhere in the middle, God. Because if I'm rich, I'm afraid that I will get this mentality where I'm full and I will deny you and say, you know, I don't need God or whatnot. And then the other end of it is don't put me in a situation where I'm poor, where I may steal. But certainly people are struggling with their desire for worldly possessions. See, when it comes to gambling, a lot of people will try to deny that it's not their desire for worldly possessions. But if it's not your desire for worldly possessions, then why are you doing it? Why would you be doing it? And then the reality is that how hard would it be for you to give it up? If you're not really driven out of your desire for worldly possessions, then what is your desire to do it? You should just be able to say, okay, I'll give it up. You know why? Because it doesn't have a pull on me. It's not a big deal. I'll give it up. It's not a big deal. I don't have a desire for it. But what you find is when you dig underneath gambling deep, I think what you'll find is covetousness. A strong desire for worldly possessions. Because if it wasn't a strong desire, you could just say, I'll give it up. I don't need to do this. I don't want to do this. I'll just leave it behind. But when you dig deep, I think that's what you'll find. Really what we have is a love for money, a love for those things of the world. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 5, it says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness. Be content with such things as you have. For He Himself has said, 'I will never leave you nor forsake you.'" It says, "Let your conduct be without covetousness." Be without that strong desire for the worldly things. It says, "Be content with such things as you have." Do we have a problem with being content? Or are we always striving for the next thing? We need bigger and better in every area of our life. We can't just say, "I'm content with the things that God has given me. He has given me sufficient things to live, sufficient things to support my family, sufficient shelter." So many people will be driven crazy just because of covetousness. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, it says, "For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness and pierced themselves with many sorrows." See, it's not money that's the root of all evil. That's not the problem. Paper is not the problem. The love of money is the root. The love of money is the root. It's what drives people into covetousness. And many people will lose their souls because of it, because they desire the things of the world more than the things of God. Number one, I think that gambling has many problems with it, because I think when you dig deep, you'll find covetousness. Number two is, I think also you'll find an idea of, are you really being a good steward? See, the Bible tells us that in James chapter 1 and verse 17, that every good gift comes from God. It says that in James chapter 1 verse 17, it says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Every good gift comes from God. Are we being a good steward of the things that God has given us? Are we being a good steward of the things that God has given us? In Matthew chapter 25, there's the parable of the talents. And we understand that these talents are actually talking about money. And as the parable lays forth, that God gives these men various talents. And it's talking about money, but usually we'll make the implication that this is actual talents or abilities that God has given us, and are we going to waste them and not use them in a productive way to grow? But when you think about that situation in Matthew chapter 25 and verse 29, when we read verse 29 after the situation has all been laid forth, it says, for to everyone who has, more will be given, and he who has abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. When God gives us something, whether it is an actual ability or any spiritual gift that he's given us, how are we going to handle it? Are we going to handle it with care? Are we going to handle it in such a way that we can do good things with it? Or are we not going to handle it in an appropriate way? See, God gives one of those individuals a talent, and he does not handle it in an appropriate way. When God gives you things, whether it's physical or spiritual, do you handle them in the correct way? Do you watch over them in the correct way? Because as I saw and heard from my family from past years, is that a lot of problems can kick in when you're not going to be a good steward. When you're not going to watch over those things which are given to you to watch over. When you're not watching over the abilities that are given to you, they will be lost. Number one, I think when we dig down deep into gambling, we find covetousness. Another thing that I think we find is that individuals are not being good stewards with the things that God has blessed them with. So many things could be done, and yet we'll cast things away so easily. That goes with physical things, but it goes along with spiritual things. Do you take for granted the things that God has blessed you with, and do you waste them? Do you waste the natural talents that God has given you? Have you wasted the physical things that God has blessed you with? Because every good gift comes from God. Are we handling those appropriately? Another one I think that we should think about is self-control. In Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23, in Galatians chapter 5, verses 22 through 23, it talks about the fruits of the Spirit. But it says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there is no law. Here are the fruits of the Spirit that are laid forth, and one of them is self-control. And we must have self-control as individuals, and what we have to do is we have to conform our minds to the will of God, based off of Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, that our job throughout our lives is to conform our minds to God's will and make sure that we're doing what He wants of us and not what we want. But are we controlled by Christ, or are we controlled by the world? It's interesting how people will justify their actions throughout this life and how they'll try to say, they're doing this for God. And if we dig down deep, that's probably not the case. Why do you do things throughout your life? See, there's people that will probably justify about anything and say, this is for God. This is for God. But is that really what God wants us to do? People have justified anything. They'll justify everything. People will justify war in the name of God. People will justify sports in the name. They'll justify anything and they'll say, this is what God's will is. Is that really God's will, or is that your will? Will you have self-control? Will you bring your mind in line with the mind of Christ, in the mind of God, and do the things that He asks you to do? Because you're going to become a slave to those that you obey. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 16, it says, do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are the one slave whom you obey? Whether of sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness, who's in control of you? Are you letting the world run your life? Are you letting the things of this world run your life? or will you let your mind be conformed to the spiritual things of God? See, in Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, it says, no one can serve two masters. No one can serve two masters, for you'll either hate the one and love the other, or else you'll be loyal to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and manna. And yet so many people will try. When I look at gambling, there are some root problems in it. We have covetousness, a desire for worldly things. Not only do we have covetousness, but we have to ask ourselves the question, are we being good stewards of the physical things that God has given us? We also have to ask the question and consider in our minds, are we in control? Are we controlled by the world or are we controlled by God? I think there's so many things that we can look at when it comes to gambling and so many principles that the Bible lays forth. I think about the golden rule in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. In Matthew chapter 7 verse 12, it basically states the golden rule that so many people will say, it's even stated in the school many times, but they don't know where it came from. It came from the Bible. Matthew chapter 7 verse 12. But when you're in a gambling situation, if you're on the losing end, would that be something that a Christian would do, doing good to those in a way that you would want them to do to you? We think about passages like love your neighbor as yourself. When we put ourselves in a gambling situation, are we loving our neighbor as ourselves? There's so many Christian principles that so many times we won't apply to every situation. That when we get into hard situations in our life where our desires start to take over, we won't look to the Bible and what it says. I think about so many situations in my life. It's so easy to get emotional and not look at what the Bible says. What does the Bible say on this topic? What does the Bible say on this topic? Or we just get swept away by the way, listening to those that are around us and not pausing to think, what would God have me do? What would God have me do in this situation? Of course, I think we have to think of the pattern of making money in the Bible. Do we ever see the apostles walk into some gambling type establishment and say, God is with me, and this is how I'm going to make my money this day? That's not the pattern we see in the Bible. Nowhere do we see Paul say, oh, I'm going to put a whole bunch down on this because I know that God's with me and he's going to bless this way of making money. Nowhere do we see that. We see patterns of making money, and the pattern is working for it. The pattern's working for it, and in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, it says, for even when we were with you, we commanded you this, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. The idea that he's forced in the Bible is that we work. We work. And that's not necessarily the only example that we have. In Acts chapter 4 and verse 34, it says, nor was there anyone among them who lacked, for all who were possessors of land or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of things that were sold. See, we see people in the Bible, what did they do in situations? They would sell land or goods. They would trade goods for money. But nowhere do I see in the Bible any example where I have people in the New Testament saying, you know what, let me gamble to get some money. That's not what we see laid forth. We see people working. But we kind of see the idea that we find in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 17, and whatever you do, in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord, giving thanks to God, the Father, through Him, this idea that we are going to do what God wants us to do. We're not going to be found in a situation where God would not have us to be. We see the example in the Bible laid forth that people work. We see that people sell, that people trade. Those are things that we see people doing in the New Testament, and yet people will say, you know what, I don't want to follow those examples, I want to ignore those examples, and I want to go my own way. When you think of gambling, maybe you would consider it stealing. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 28, what does it say? It says, let him who stole or steal no longer, but let him labor. The pattern is laid forth, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give to him who is in need. When I look at the New Testament examples, I cannot find it. I cannot find it as a valuable course of action. And when we think of gambling, it's one of those things where you think of that situation, think of the things that are around it. Think of the things that are tied to it. Many times, what's connected to gambling? Deceit. Over the years, they have so many things that they've tried to lay forth. They have it so athletes can't gamble. Why can't the athletes gamble? Well, if athletes gamble, you know what happens? Well, they might try to throw the game. And they have it so officials can't gamble. You know why? Because they might throw the game. Well, what would you call that? Dishonesty. See, gambling is tied to a lot of things that people don't want to think about. When you get into the gambling scene, what you will find is you will find dishonesty. What does the Bible tell us in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 25 through 27? It says, therefore, putting away lying, let each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are all members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath, nor give a place to the devil. It says, therefore, putting away lying. When we get in a gambling situation, you know what starts to happen? Lying. Deception. Think of a poker table. What do people do? They try to hide their cards. They're not going to tell you what the cards they have. Of course, that might be an interesting strategy, just being honest. But in a game of poker, what are people saying? They're going to be second-guessing. They're going to say, he's trying to trick me, isn't he? He's trying to trick me. He's trying to lie. He's trying to deceive me in order to gain that other person's money. When we think about gambling, we don't only think about deceit, but I start thinking about some other things that come up in those situations. My grandfather talks about the situations where he grew up in. He says that he's really never been to a gambling place when he was growing up because his father was very into that lifestyle, that he never went a place where he didn't see alcohol. He didn't see alcohol in any place that he said that he went where there was gambling. In fact, my grandpa recalls some stories where he went into gambling places at such a young age that his dad would just mess around with the people there, and he would give them actual chips that he would buy, and he'd say, go to that table and play a few games, and just to see people's reactions. When you start to get into the gambling scene, you see dishonesty, we see drinking, we see things that certainly we wouldn't want to be involved in. Certainly we see stealing. We see stealing on occasion. See, when we look into the world, it's tied to a lot of things. You know, Proverbs chapter 28, verse 22, I think it says something interesting. It says, a man with an evil eye hastens after riches. He hastens after riches. In Proverbs chapter 8, verse 22, it says, a man with an evil eye hastens after riches and does not consider that poverty will come upon him. Do we run towards the bad odds? Do we run towards the bad statistics? That's what my great-grandfather did. And what my great-grandfather did is he actually played for the house. And what he told my grandfather, he said, you will not win. He said, they set the deck against you. None of these places can stay open unless they win the establishment. He said, you sit down at a table. He said, you know how many other people are at that table? He said, five people are playing for the house. He said, there's just two people that came out from the community to come in and play. He said, they're playing against you. The odds are stacked against you every time, every gambling situation. The odds are not in your favor. And yet, how many people go? How many people go to places where they don't have the odds in their favor? Are we being good stewards in the things that God has given us? I've seen gambling destroy family. Certainly, it has taken a toll on my own. And when I look at it, people say, they'll abandon it, say it's not a big deal. But when I look at the Bible, there are some root problems, I think, with gambling. Covetousness. Are you desiring the things of the world? Are you desiring those things of the world so much that sometimes you even put things to the side? And so many times that's what I found. And if it's not a big deal, then you can just give it up, can't you? You know? if you don't have that covetousness, if you don't have that strong desire, can you just say I'm done? But the problem is, can you say you're done? Can you walk away? As my wife said on occasion, if you can't give it up, you're probably addicted. Are you addicted to certain things? Can you give them up, even for a short period of time? When I look at gambling, we see the covetousness that underlies. We see basic principles violated, such as the golden rule and loving your neighbor to some degree. We see the environment that's surrounded. We see certain things of should we be a good steward with the things which God has blessed us with, that He blessed us with the ability to have? Do we consider our self-control? What's really controlling us throughout this life? A lot of times people justify things in their own minds for various reasons. In Proverbs chapter 14, verse 12, it says, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. A lot of people say, it seems right to me. It seems right to me. I don't see any issue with it. Well, just because it seems right to you, or just because it doesn't break the law, doesn't make it right. There are a lot of things that are legal in this country that probably shouldn't be. There's a lot of things that people do that they probably shouldn't do. There's a lot of things that people say, this seems right to me. But the question is what does God have to say about it? The challenge that I always lay forth is what are the Christian reasons that we should gamble? In 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 21, it says, test all things, hold fast to that which is good. Let's put it to the test. What are the reasons for gambling that the Bible lays forth? That's the challenge. What are the reasons that the Bible lays forth that this would be a good thing that we should be involved in? And I just remind myself of Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, verses 36 through 37, it says, for what is the profit of a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul, or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? And yet so many people get lost in the desire for the worldly things. So many people get lost throughout this life over things that we know are passing away, things that will not linger, things that really don't have meaning. We will cling to those, but we won't cling to the spiritual things that God has laid forth. I don't think I have the answer to all issues when it comes to these things. I just try to look through everything in a Bible lens. As I face situations in my life that I haven't experienced before, I try to sit down with the Bible. I've got things going on in my life right now where I have to sit down with the Bible and honestly ask myself, what would Jesus do if he was in my situation? What would Jesus do? Or am I going to go my own way with what I think is right? What I would like to happen? What I would want to happen? Or will I try to sit down with the Bible and say, what would God want me to do? And maybe God's telling you today, you need to walk away. Walk away from worldly things. Walk away from some of those things. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation this evening, we certainly plead and pray, and we certainly hope that you will not trade your soul for worldly things. And yet many people will. And yet what's so sad is they're not trading it for the whole world. They're not trading their soul for the whole world. They're just trading it for a few pieces of paper. They're just trading it for a boat. They're just trading it for a house. Not necessarily that we can't have these things, but so many times we get lost. Get lost in this life and lose our priorities. Maybe you need to get your priorities right this evening. You need to become a New Testament Christian. You've heard the word, you believed it, you need to repent, confess, and be baptized. Maybe that's what you need to do, or maybe you need to get back on the straight and narrow path. However we can help you, we'd love to help you in any way. If you please come as we stand and as we sing.